Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Welcome to Cavs a Podcast. I'm Nate Smith. I'm here with Eli Kim, Chris Francis, and we're celebrating the Cavs season, I think. A lot of people are saying the Cavs season was a failure, but, you know, as Eli said today, they were one of the best eight teams in the NBA this year. So I don't really see that as a failure. I wish they'd have done better, but I'm happy with how it turned out. What about you, Eli?
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of the season, if you were to tell me that they would win a road playoff game and they would win their first playoff series, I think I would consider that a success.
They won a road playoff game in Boston.
And I think if you were to tell me they finished one game out of the division, I would have been ecstatic because I thought they would have won at least 55 games. But that being said, I think the regular season was more disappointing than the playoffs in some regards for myself, but I think they still had a, you know, like I said, they're one of the top eight teams, and I think we can't lose that fact that they did make progress this year in a very meaningful way.
I thought a ton of guys made a ton of progress. Obviously, there's some guys that I was a bit baffled with their role, but all in all, you know, one of the things I'm most happy about is they showed some grit coming back, winning game seven in Orlando, or not in Orlando, but against Orlando, and then winning a big playoff game on the road, and then really playing hard in losses versus Boston when they didn't have Mitchell and they didn't have Allen. And we'll get into that, but I was happy with how the season turned out, at least in terms of the effort. What about you, Chris?
I'll be a bit contrarian. I think it's a little bit of a disappointment. I think the disappointment is lessened, obviously, by the context. Cavs were out, you know, as you mentioned just a second ago, three key rotation players, including their star. So I think that lessens the disappointment a bit. But I mean, you know, I think what colors my view of the season is I have high expectations of Donovan Mitchell. I've always been a Darius Garland fan, have high expectations of Evan Mobley. So, you guys make good points. You know, top eight is nothing to sneeze at, and fighting valiantly until the end, nothing to sneeze at. Also, I'd say, you know, regarding the last series, you know, I think Orlando was a lot better than many people knew. You know, I think
I'll agree with that.
To me, there was a difference in physicality between Orlando and Boston.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So, kind of, you know, so that's, you know, that's another positive. I'd say on the positive end, I'd say, you know, just a cursory look at the stats real quick here. Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley really put themselves on the map in these playoffs. I think they acquitted themselves very well as far as playoff performers, playoff, you know, maintainers or playoff risers from their regular season production. So, you know, it's not all disappointment. So, you know, but a little bit.
Yeah, and let's get into that final game again, or maybe the final two games against Boston after, what was it, the game they won in Boston? Game two. Yeah, game two, I think, surprised everybody, including Boston. And that was probably the best front-to-back the Cavs played all playoffs. And I think one of the things that hurt them in this series is that you can't F around in the first round in the NBA playoffs, because if you go to game seven, you're not getting nearly as much rest from night to night. I mean, the Cavs never had an extra day for travel in a seven game series, the entirety of it. And in addition, you know, the longer you play, the more you make yourself susceptible to injuries. And that's what ultimately felled the Cavs in the playoffs. But in the final couple games, there was a lot of good takeaways. I mean, I will take away the line that Evan Mobley had in the last game, which was 31 points. Sorry, 33. My glasses aren't quite working here. 33, 7, and 4 with three stocks and three turnovers on 24 shots. Pretty impressive line. I thought he grew a ton in that series. I think a lot of people talked about after that series that he shouldn't have to share the floor with Jared Allen, which I think is maybe a little silly, but, yeah, he looked phenomenal. And so did, in that last game, so did Marcus Morris, who had, what did he have? 25 and 3 boards. I mean, I thought they acquitted themselves very well. Darius Garland did not shoot well, but he played really hard and put in a 44-minute performance. I thought Sam Merrill played really well in the last game and frankly should have got more run than he did. But I think, you know, if I were to ask you, Chris, you would say he didn't get as much run as he should have got the whole postseason. And
or regular season.
Well, yeah, there you go. But what do you think? Any takeaways from the final games? Did the Cavs have any chance? I thought they had a shot, but they had to play pretty much a perfect game, and Garland couldn't muster that.
Yeah, I mean, it fell on Garland's shoulders, and unfortunately, you know, what we haven't seen him do, I don't think this season, is just like go off as a scorer. You know, like he had that 50 some odd point game last year, right? So
yeah,
we just didn't really see him assert himself as a scorer like he could and like we know he can. So that's kind of what I would chalk up the last two games to. Maybe using Mobley a little bit more, maybe milking that, you know, production a little bit more. You know, I'm glad you shouted out Sam Merrill. The team posted their best offensive rating with him on the floor in the playoffs. So I don't think that's any small feat I feel like that's a proof of concept about his gravity and the spacing he creates for the offense. So,
I'll get into that a little more too. I thought one of the problems that the Cavs had is they almost over defined the Cavs roles. Like once Sam Merrill got past, when you ran him off the line, he refused to shoot a layup or he refused to hit a pull-up jumper. And the same was way with Okoro. He refused to take a mid-range shot. And a lot of times it really hurt the offense because that's the shot that was there. And they kind of overdrove into the teeth of the D.
100% agree with that. I'd say also same, all that applies to Dean Wade as well, although we haven't seen Dean Wade very much. I would say
no, and Dean Wade as well. It's hard to quantify that with Dean Wade because you don't know how much of that is just coming back from injury and how much of that is just not feeling empowered as an offensive player.
Totally agree. It's a great point. I think it's a mark against JB over the course of the season and his coaching style to have these narrow, just not trusting. It's basically a lack of trust, right? You know, he just doesn't trust them to do that or to execute that play in the heat of battle.
Yeah, for sure. But what about you, Eli? Did the Cavs have any shot in game five?
Man, I don't know about game five, but I thought, game three and four, they did have legitimate chances. Mitchell was there. They could have done it.
Well, Mitchell was there in game three, but not
correct,
game four.
Not game four. And game four, I thought they had a good game plan, but they just literally couldn't buy a bucket in the second half. I mean,
no,
their
and
shooting was atrocious.
And the officiating was ridiculous. Like
throughout the whole playoffs.
Yeah.
Good God.
I mean, that was it the last game that foul on Al Horford was overturned, where he just body checked him out of bounds and they decided it wasn't a foul on replay? Was that the last game or the second? Was that game four or five?
I think that was four.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the worst reversals I've ever seen. Like, a reversal should be incontrovertible, and that was not in any way, shape, or form incontrovertible. And that was the game where Garland got called for a foul on Brown, when Brown literally kicked him while he was in the air. I mean, the Celtics are one of my least favorite teams in the league to watch. They are a bunch of whiny bitches. What was my tweet yesterday? I said, Jason Tatum is the most colossal bitch in the NBA. I mean,
wow.
No, it's true. I mean, Trae Young is the whiniest bitch in the NBA, but no one would ever call Trae Young colossal. So, Jason Tatum owns that. I can't stand watching the man play. He shows up the refs every play. He thinks he's fouled on every play, yet he's allowed as egregious an arm bar of pushing guys off as anybody in the NBA. He is definitely privileged NBA player, and he doesn't know how privileged he is.
Go Duke, the Brotherhood.
Oh, God. Anyway, game five, I feel like we cut you off, Eli. Anything more you want to say about games four and five there, Eli?
Yeah, I just thought that they were outmatched, and the only way they were going to win is if they could take advantage of, the Celtics being not as prepared or not as on top of their game without Mitchell playing. They did a good job to start, but, like I said, they literally could not buy a bucket. I mean, even in game five, the Cavs were up six, and if Niang went 1-for-3, they push it to 9, but he goes 0-for-3, and then the Celtics close the back up to take the lead at half. So it's just, I don't know. I mean, I understand you need locker room guys, but you got to have some other on-court skill.
You got two more years, Eli, of the George's Niang experience, so strap in.
They better trade him. They should try to trade him.
I did have a question for you guys. And maybe think about it as we go into the break. If the Cavs are healthy, and let's give you two scenarios, a healthy Cavs squad, or at least a fully operational Cavs squad, maybe with Jared Allen nursing bruised ribs, can they beat a zingerless Boston team? And think about that while we go to the break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Cavs the podcast, Eli Kim, Chris Francis, I'm Nate Smith. Cavs gave us, what was our win total? 49 wins? Or 50? I can't remember.
I don't know. That's actually a good question. Hot Googling action?
I believe it was 50, but anyway.
I think it was like 48, actually. I could be wrong, though.
I mean, it should have been one higher than that. And, like, in hindsight, that tanking that game, the last game of the season, seems really dumb right now. Like, am I wrong? Like, I feel like I'd much rather have played the Knicks or the Pacers than play this fully operational Boston squad. Do you think they could have got out of the first round against Miami or Philly?
Yes.
Definitely easily. Against Miami. Not sure about Philly, but definitely Miami. Probably Philly.
Yeah, I mean, and who knows? Maybe Jimmy Butler doesn't get hurt in that case, but I thought it was a really, really unserious and silly way to approach the postseason, and it kind of bore out with all the slop we heard in the last 2 days, or the last day, I guess. It's been a long day in terms of, you know, it hasn't even been 24 hours since they lost, and I feel like just the avalanche of Cavs slop has flown down the trough, so to speak.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It's crazy. Cavs are the talk of the NBA for the past 24 hours.
Yeah, it's super weird. So in the last, so just before we put this playoff series to bed and the playoffs in general, anybody stand out to you? I mean, we can say all the people that stood out bad, but who stood out? Who surprised you in the playoffs, Eli?
For me, definitely Evan Mobley. I think he proved he can be that dude and someone you can continue to build around. I probably was most impressed with him. And then I also was kind of impressed with... I mean, Donovan took it to another level. He just continues to show that he is a superstar.
100%.
But I think besides that, the rest of the Cavs guys, I mean, Jared Allen was great, but he only played, what, three games? Four games?
Four games. And, yeah, I got hurt in game four. And we'll get into that in a minute because
and I feel
one
like
of my many bones to pick. Anyway.
And I think Strus was kind of hit or miss. If he was more consistent, I mean, I think guys Strus are like, hey, you know, that's expected from a guy like Strus. He's not making $20 million a year. So he did, like, he met the bar for what he's paid to do. But I think of the other guys, everyone else pretty much disappointed except for Donovan and Mobley. And that's kind of, and Allen, you know, if
he, I mean, I'll throw another guy in there for you. I thought Dean Wade played pretty well coming back from injury. Definitely showed the defense that he'd shown in the regular season. Obviously, his shot wasn't quite where we thought it was, but he was exactly the player I remembered. And I actually thought Marcus Morris gave him some really good minutes in the playoffs and probably had the most baffling minutes distributions of anybody in the playoffs. Like, just didn't make any sense to me. I don't know. Anyway, Chris, what about you? Any big surprises? Anybody impress you in the playoffs that we might not have thought of?
No, I mean, I think you guys pretty much covered it. I mean, I kind of expected Mobley to step up, and I'm glad he did and kind of proved me right there. Mitchell, of course, you know, you guys already sung his praises. But, yeah, everything just kind of reinforced how he's a playoff performer. Dean Wade's defense, obviously, was a good one. Sam Merrill, just his gravity, you know. Thankfully, it did appear that JB finally decided to go to him more, but that was probably more out of necessity than anything because of the injuries. But, yeah, I mean, those are probably the guys you would identify. The numbers say that actually Isaac Okoro, for all of his offensive woes, and obviously the offense was garbage with him on the floor, but he did play good defense, you know, so or the team played good defense while he was on the floor, and they were competitive while he was on the floor. Only a minus 3.7 net rating, which is ranked third among all Cavs for the playoffs. So you know,
did the Cavs have a negative net rating for the playoffs? I feel like they did. They got their butts handed to them a lot more than they won, right?
They did. And in fact, I mean, it's really kind of ironically, it's probably a credit to JB in the Orlando series that they were able to pull off. That was an upset. You know, they were not playing well, but somehow pulled it off because they were getting shellacked in the net rating numbers against Orlando. But it was the wizardry of Donovan Mitchell and you know, others.
And grit.
Yeah. Like, no,
they
absolutely
just ground them down in game seven.
Yeah. Just mental tough. Yeah, absolutely.
They were the more experienced team, and Orlando wasn't ready for the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I think that covers it. I mean, we can't really, you know, there weren't too many Cavs that actually rose to the occasion, unfortunately.
Fortunately, their best player did when he was healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, really, Donovan Mitchell did take everything to another level. What did he average, like 35-6 or something?
Yeah, I mean, he was shooting 58 true shooting on 33% usage.
Yeah, that's insane.
With a 23.9% assist rate. So
On one leg.
Yeah. And an 8.5 turnover ratio. So, and a 12.3% defensive rebound rate. He was doing it all. He was mini LeBron.
Yeah. Oh, that's exactly who he is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'll ask you guys a follow-up question. Who is your playoff blame tampon? Like, who just deserves the lion's share? And if you want to say JB Bickerstaff, that's fine. Who deserves the lion's share of the blame for the Cavs not advancing and the big mess that was the second round of the playoffs and the first round, really?
No, I mean, it's easy.
Well, name names, Eli. Name
Darius
and shame.
Garland, Darius Garland and JB Bickerstaff. I mean,
I can't argue with you.
I mean, if you want to try to throw blame at Niang, sure, but my argument is JB shouldn't be playing in period after watching what happened.
No, yeah, I'm with you. It should have been obvious to anybody who watched the regular season that Niang was unplayable.
Yeah, and for some reason he kept rolling his ass out there. Literally rolling. But I just...
Gorgeous Georges.
Yeah, I just don't understand. Just a lot of decisions were just really weird. And I think Garland, like, everyone is trying to make him... I think a lot of people are making excuses for him. A lot of people are trying to be like, oh, you know, he was hurt. He was going through some personal things.
What personal things was he going through? Having $35 million a year contract?
I mean, they were saying that, like, his grandmother passed away, and that's someone who's very dear to him. Which, I mean, yeah, okay, that can affect any of us, don't get me wrong, but, like, his carelessness is what I think drove a lot of people upset. It just felt like he didn't care that much, period. And that's where that report where, and we'll get into all the reporting later, I'm sure, but that's where the report...
Some slop.
That's where the report where, you know, there's a report from Chris Fedor that Donovan wasn't happy with some of the players who were immature and didn't have focus. And I think the obvious guy for that is Darius Garland. Just the way that he kind of had some extremely lackadaisical turnovers, especially in the biggest moments.
Throughout the season.
Yeah, and in the postseason, it's just exacerbated, especially in, like, Game 6 when they're, you know, trying to close it out on the road, and Garland has one of the worst fourth quarters we've seen in a long time in the playoffs. So,
yeah,
stuff like that.
I'll counterpoint that. I would kind of disagree with that. I mean, he has a 9.8% turnover ratio for the playoffs, which is a massive improvement over his regular season.
Agreed.
And also, I'd say, I mean, looking at the numbers across the board, really, if you want to blame, I do blame Garland. You know, Garland was a major factor for the downfall of the Cavs this season. But I think what it was just simply, like I said before, is scoring. He just refused to shoot. Refused to shoot open shots and lost confidence in his beautiful jumper. So that's what really I would pin Garland's the problem with Garland over the playoffs was he just was an unwilling scorer. He needed to be that second 20 to 30 point per game guy, and he just simply was unwilling to do it.
Unwilling or unable? I mean, I think he had a lot of physical issues. I think the jaw injury early on hurt him. I think, you know, I think coming into $160-80 million contract had a lot to do with how poorly he played. He seemed poorly prepared from game to game. He seemed distracted. He seemed, I mean, the whole team at times. Definitely looked like they had the Miami flu and the LA flu and the Houston flu. Like, there was a lot of nights or a lot of days. Like, how bad were the Cavs on weekend afternoon games? They were abysmal. And literally those Orlando games, I was like, oh my God, they're scheduling Cavalier afternoon games. They've already lost. Like, if you took the under on Cavalier afternoon games, I'd love to see the line against the spread from Cavalier afternoon games on the weekend in the regular season. I'll bet you they did not cover any game. I bet you it was like 1-12 or something like that. They did not handle success well throughout the regular season. They didn't handle it in the postseason against Orlando. Like, games 2 and 3 were two of the worst postseason games I've seen. It was, and Garland bears a lot of the blame there, but the number one guy to me, and I like him as a person. You know, I told Eli last night, I would love if the Cavs, offered JB a role with the franchise, like vice president of cookie operations, for JB Bickerstaff, but The JB Bickerstaff era in Cleveland needs to end. And I think the only reason it hasn't ended is they're trying to be nice, and they also don't want it to look like the players bitched a bunch to Sham Sharania, and now they're going to fire the guy. Because nobody tells Dan Gilbert what to do. So I literally think that's all it is. But I think it, regardless of how you feel about JB Bickerstaff, I think the Cavs need new voice. And I don't think either of you would agree with or disagree with that. Am I right?
Yeah, I think they need a new voice. I think unless a coach is extremely dominant, like, you're not supposed to get 5 years. That's not typical in the NBA life cycle. And the fact that JB has had 5.5 years as a head coach, I think he's outlived his timeline. And look, I think he won't get as much credit as he deserves for building the culture. He definitely instilled a defensive first culture, even on kind of the one of the youngest teams in the NBA, which will get lost because of his playoff failures and inability to be a savvy tactician. But I think it's just time. I mean, think about it. Even like the Lakers, right? They've even won a championship since JB was a coach, and they've already swapped coaches twice now. It's just normal. That's just the era of the NBA we're in now. And I think the Cavs are so interesting because I feel like their mentality is they want to try to prove everyone how freaking smart they are. And I think this was a really dumb decision.
And sometimes they just outthink themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, who are the three guys, four guys maybe in the NBA that have that reputation where they're not going to get fired? It's going to be Spoelstra, Popovich, and probably Rick Carlisle. Yeah, that's exactly who I was going to say. I mean, I don't know if there's another team in the NBA that has that. I mean, maybe Joe Mazzulla might be the only one now, but if they don't win a championship, I think there will be very serious consideration to firing him. So, anyway.
Well, what I would say about JB is that I wouldn't necessarily be against keeping him if the organization made a concerted effort and a demand of him to not coach offense and to bring in somebody to coach offense. Because that's really
You can do that, though. He doesn't have that personality to me that he's going to be that guy that's going to let somebody else run the huddle.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fair. I mean, and ego, he does come across as a guy with a big ego, especially compared relative to his record. So I could see that. Yeah, that's a fair point. But I'm just saying, I'm just saying that I guess I'm just paying homage to his ability to coach the defensive side and also to get buy-in from players. But, it's the MO on him consistently over the course of his coaching career is he can't coach offense, and that bore out again. So,
yeah. And I thought they had a terrible staff this year. Like, Sidney Lowe's one of the worst head coaches in NBA history. And, Luke Walton, another bomb out of a head coach. Like, excuse me. To me, it was interesting that the guy who was literally the associate head coach was the guy that was least on camera and least got like interview opportunities and that kind of thing. Buck.
Talking about Coach Buck?
Coach Buck.
Shout out to EG, baby.
Yeah, like I thought it was super weird. He didn't get his flowers at all. So maybe that's an ego thing. I don't know. But
No, that's an interesting observation because you're right. He did not get any FaceTime this year at all.
No, it was weird, for sure.
It's probably intentional, because he wants his next gig to be disassociated with JB.
Maybe, but although wow. I think JB was auditioning for his next role for the last 2 months, personally. Like, his refusal to go out and get a tech and, go to cost himself money for his guys told me a lot. Like, There's some of those calls in some of those games that Tom Thibodeau would have lost his mind and maybe got, or Steve Kerr would have got kicked out of a game, and JB does the, like, it's not good when you adopt the Byron Scott fold your arms across your chest and shake your head look. Like, don't copy that move. It's a bad move. It's a bad look. So yeah, I think the JB era hopefully has come and gone. I'll always thank him for instilling the culture. And I think Max Strus made a really nice quote post game yesterday. It's hard to find a place where guys all want to play together and want to be here. And JB did that. And maybe it's time things have changed, but it was a good era. The Cavs got better. They were fun to watch. They played hard most of the time. And I loved it, but things got to change. So, and with that, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Cavs, the podcast. Eli Kim, Chris Francis, Nate Smith, and it is Slop Talk. We're feeding at the trough.
Let's
here.
Let's go, baby.
Eli, there's been a lot of slop flowing down the trough the last 24 hours. What is some of... Basically, there's two main stories, right? There's the Shyam Charania...
with Jason Lloyd and Joe Varden.
And Joe Varden. And then there's Chris Fedor. Yeah. And then there's the Wojnarowski stuff, right?
Yep.
And then Windhorst.
A couple local guys, too.
And Windhorst.
Yep.
So take us through it. Start with Shams, I think.
Yeah. So
that's the most kind of eye-opening, I would say.
Yeah. I think the Shams article was the most eye-opening, the longest one. And in a way, a little disheartening because I think for a long time, the Cavs front office has been very good about what gets out, what gets reported. You know, it never really felt like the core guys were the ones that were like leaking stuff. But this time it kind of feels like there was some leakage, for lack of a better term. Almost 30 minutes after the Cavs lost, there was a, I don't know how many words it was, but just a scathing article about
2000, I would say.
Yeah, about how the Cavs basically did not believe in JB Bickerstaff and that his job is in, quote, serious jeopardy. I was surprised that he wasn't fired based on that article dropping that quick, but I also think the interesting thing was right after that article dropped, Wojnarowski reported that the Cavs were going to take some time because the candidate list right now is not super great. They want to really make sure that it's the right move before making a decision on Bickerstaff. So, and I think one thing you have to remember is JB's father is a legend in the NBA circles. I mean, he's an advisor for the Cavs now, which is, I think, hilarious because of nepotism.
Yeah, he is. JB is definitely a Nepo baby.
He was, it's funny because he was one of the advisors for the coaching search after Beilein. And I'm sure he's like, why not give my son a chance? He's already on the staff. And anyways.
Is he still an advisor?
I'm not sure if he still has a title.
I believe
so.
That's crazy.
But basically in the Shams article, it talks about a lot. It touched on a lot of all the core players. So basically, Donovan Mitchell, it feels like there's a sense in the league, and this is all paraphrasing here, there's a sense in the league that he would be open to an extension in Cleveland, assuming that the Cavs are willing to be committed and build around him, essentially. I think the Cavs ownership, as much as we hate them sometimes, and that we hate the front office sometimes for the way they think, you can always count on Dan Gilbert to write the check. I mean, heck, the Lakers don't write the check. They let Caruso go because they wanted to avoid a luxury tax. Would the Cavs have ever done that? No. They would have gladly been the most expensive team, and they were when they beat the Warriors. So that's just proof that the ownership will continue to spend when they think it's worth it. That being said, the other article, the article continued to say that Darius Garland would probably seek a trade if Mitchell were to stay, and that Rich Paul would basically, you know, talk with Cavs ownership to do so. I think that's pretty obvious who the leak is on the Shams article based on that reporting. Probably the Clutch guys, and Shams has been known to be close to Clutch. Because
are there any other Clutch guys on the Cavs other than Garland?
Tristan Thompson.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then I think the article did talk about how almost all the veterans kind of lost faith in JB due to his lack of X and O's and expertise. So, that being said, I thought it was pretty clear that no one really liked JB anymore, and his time is probably coming up.
I don't know if like is the term. It's just they'd gotten tired of him.
Yeah. They don't think he's the right guy to take him to the next level, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And do you mind if I just step in and call out a couple things that the article called out, that we called out in the regular season?
Yeah, go ahead.
One of them was, you know, playing Donovan Mitchell extended minutes in that double overtime game in Chicago. Either Chicago or Houston. It was Houston. And that was just utterly ridiculous, and contributed to some of the many health problems the Cavs have had. I think the other thing that came out of that article was his penchant for running guys into the grounds. Like, they were talking about how the Cavs spent like the first week of practice doing suicides all practice, and everybody's like, what is the point of this? And then lo and behold, no less than three Cavs had hamstring injuries in the preseason, which is a little bit nuts. And then what were some of the other ones? The loss to the Clippers, where Paul George brought them back from 26 down, and JB's unwillingness to send a double team at him. And then a lot of just the lack of offensive innovation to get guys open in the postseason and in the late regular season. Am I missing any big ones there, Eli or Chris?
I think one other thing was they talked about how there was maybe a little bit of a disconnect where JB would like listen to Donovan and like play him if he didn't want to come out, but Kobe was like, no, what the hell are you doing? Like, he's not even playing USA basketball for this. So there was some of that where there seemed to be a little bit of a disconnect between the coach and the front office.
Oh, well, yeah. And I'll say the other one was the shots that Marcus Morris took in the post game podium, where he basically said, yeah, I don't understand my minutes, but I'm just going to stay ready to play. Like, the thing that baffled me is Georges Niang went to the bench after being abysmal and unplayable in game one of the Boston series and pretty much all of the Orlando series. And then through, you know, Marcus Morris wasn't great, but he wasn't bad. And he really didn't do anything to lose his kind of rotation spot. And then all of a sudden they were rolling Niang out there again. And he was just one of the worst, if not the worst, weak side defender I've ever seen in the NBA. Just unplayably bad, and couldn't shoot any. Can't shoot anymore. Can't score in the playoffs. Too slow, too fat, too old. So that was alluded to as well. And I think, you know, all three of us were baffled with the amount of, like, what kind of pictures does Georges Niang have of JB Bickerstaff?
Yeah. I think one other thing the article did talk about that we haven't talked about was it had a little nugget in there about Mobley's agent not wanting to go to Cleveland in 2021, but they still selected him anyway, but the relationship is good. I think that's just planting the seed that, you know, just to say Mobley's pretty safe and the Cavs probably would not want to entertain any trade offers for him. I think that was kind of the point of that.
And then the other big thing was that a lot of the Cavs thought that Jared Allen could have played through, at least, you know, shot up some painkillers and tried to play through that injury a little bit. I don't know what to make of any of that. Like, I guess to me, before we move on to some of the other slop, like, you know, to me, if Fedor and Jason Lloyd, who are kind of the garbage scows of Cavs coverage, if they're throwing that stuff out there, you got to kind of take everything with a grain of salt, especially the way they had that all queued up right after the series.
I think you meant Varden and Lloyd.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Varden and Lloyd. Like, the way they had that queued up to go 30 seconds after the series, like, did Clutch just write that for them? Like, how much stock do you put in that, Chris?
I mean, I kind of do, because it came from player sources, right? Or at least that's what the article cited, is that it was teammates that felt kind of abandoned in that situation. Also, I think there's past evidence that Allen, you know, the problems he has, I don't think are related to skill, talent, or athleticism. It's more he's soft and he's kind of injury prone. I mean, like, he was out he was out for the end of the season before the play-in, really couldn't ramp up for the play-in that one year. Got, you know, sunned in the New York series last year, and then, you know, this year. So
he's never shown up to camp and played well out of the gate, nor played well after All-Star breaks. So
no, yeah, I mean, yeah, you've noticed that, and you know, it definitely, he didn't start out this season good. So, but so I put some stock into it. On the flip side, he really did. he improved parts of his game this season as a positive. So it's an interesting question. You know, it's funny because I was probably more of a, you know, well, this is what I'll bring up to troll people. Who would you rather have right now, Isaiah Hartenstein or Jared Allen?
I'd 100% prefer Jared Allen with a better coach. Maybe somebody can motivate him a little better, but.
Really? Oh, I'd take hard
rather
rock all
than
day,
humpback
baby.
Hardy. Yeah. Jared Allen to me is literally one of the best play finishers in the NBA. Like, he's got among the highest field goal percentage. He can finish with either hand. He's unbelievably efficient. I think part of Jared Allen resented, I don't think Allen and Mobley loved playing together. I think they both wanted to be the center in like a four out offense. And I think Mobley was kind of a square peg in a round hole, and you've seen how much better he's been at the five, at least offensively. But Jared Allen is just so GD talented. I think he's the best interior finisher in the NBA, to be frank. I mean, obviously, you know, Jokic does everything at a next level. But like, if you need a bucket and you throw it to Jared Allen within 5 feet of the basket, you've got a 70% chance of scoring. I don't know. Eli, what do you think? Eli, would you rather have Hardy or Jared Allen?
I'd definitely rather have Jared Allen, but I don't like talking about the Knicks because the Knicks are doing everything that the Cavs want to do without and having success with it.
Yeah, they're
playing McBride and Brunson, playing those guys 45 minutes a night, and those guys are both shorter than Donovan. And
yeah, but they're also burning those guys out. Like, I'm not sure they're going to get past Indy.
I think they will. They blew him out last game.
We'll see.
But I would definitely take Jared Allen over Hartenstein. But I do agree. I think there was a level of, think about it. Jared Allen was healthy pretty much the whole regular season, right? He didn't miss a lot of games. I think he missed only one. And the team played their best stretch of basketball with just Jared Allen and not Evan Mobley.
And they ran a lot of offense through him.
And they ran a ton of offense through him. They ran the four-out lineup, and it worked really well. And statistically speaking, Jared Allen was the better player for the Cavs this year.
In the regular season, yeah.
In the regular season. In every plus-minus metric, any pairing with Mitchell, any pairing with Garland, it was Jared Allen. So,
but then we got to the postseason, and Jared Allen was one of the best defensive players and looked like an offensive revelation in the Boston series, right?
Yeah. Or Evan Mobley did, right?
So, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, and I talk about one of the best abilities is availability, and the Cavs team was horrendous at that this year across the board.
Well, and that gets to one of my big beefs is the way they manage minutes. And, you know, I said that you can't, I mean, if you're a good team, you can't win a championship in the first round, but you can certainly lose one. And I thought the way the Cavs approached the first round really affected them. The fact that Mobley and Allen both got hurt in a game four where they shouldn't have been out on the floor down 20 in a game that was over and they weren't playing hard in, and then they got injured, that to me is a huge indictment and was typical of the J.B. Bickerstaff era. And all the things they pointed out in that article, the way they manage minutes and the way he runs guys into the ground, were borne out in that game. So,
how about we should add one to the failures of the season, Cavs training staff? I figure you get on
for sure. No, and that's what I'm alluding to. But it's also, you know, part of that is J.B. Bickerstaff not listening to his training staff and not doing smart things. But yeah, I would love a whole new training staff that knows what the hell they're doing. Because like, if I was a Cleveland Clinic, I wouldn't want my name associated with that team. as freaking injured as they are all the time, they don't scream wellness.
It's just funny.
Eli, you disagree?
No, I'm with you 100%. when they're saying Donovan Mitchell's over there getting around the clock treatment, like that's the last thing I would want to my hospital to be associated with.
I'm with you. I mean,
I guess we're not getting that Cleveland Clinton endorsement anytime soon.
Well, and this has been an issue since Kevin Love signed a contract extension. They mismanaged his hand last year. They mismanaged Larry Nance's hand the year before. But the year before that, they mismanaged Kevin Love's calf injury. I mean, I give Donovan Mitchell and Jared Allen credit. I wouldn't trust that freaking coaching staff. They told me to go back in injured, or training staff. Would you? Like, Jared Allen's going to be a free agent after next season. He's eligible for an extension, you know? Like, I don't blame those guys for not wanting to play injured, because the Cavs training staff has been a bunch of dunderheaded ninny muggins. Yeah. Anyway, we'll get to more after the break. Welcome back to Cavs, a podcast. The inimitable, I don't know how I said that, but Eli Kim, Chris Francis, Nate Smith, Cavs, a podcast. what were we talking about? So I think the question of the hour, right, Eli? And we can get into the Waj article and a little bit about what Brian Windhorst has been talking about. And I can't remember, I guess Varden and Pluto. But the big question is Donovan Mitchell, does he stay or does he go?
Yeah. And I think, honestly, that domino is what will trigger everything for the Cavs offseason. I think I respect Donovan, I think, because he said it seems like he does want to make, he wants to remedy this, situation this year, which I truly respect because he doesn't have any obligation to. He could theoretically be like, hey, you know, I can make more money waiting another year, opting out and doing like a 5-year deal with you or whoever else and take, you know, doing a sign and trade, but he sounds like he does not want to go down that path. But with that said, I think the Shams article talked a lot about Mitchell not having trust in JB. I think Chris Fedor's article also touched on that. And Chris Fedor's article also touched on how Donovan was frustrated with his teammates, lack of preparedness and lack of game planning at shoot-arounds, felt like they didn't know what the heck they were doing at shoot-around. So just all these other things that are adding up, highlighting that, you know, the way the coaching staff was going and the way the players felt like they were going, it was not an efficient way or, you know, like a championship level of attention to detail from the coaching staff down.
I mean, I'll say it. I thought the Cavs goals, quote unquote, to win in the first round were dumb. Like, why? Your goal should not be to win in the first round. Your goal should be to win an NBA championship or at least to get there, right?
Mm-hmm. 100%.
No, I agree with that.
100%. Especially when you have Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, and I don't think this is anything new to. We've been saying this all season, right? Like, we were all a little perplexed at. I mean, even after last year where they're like, oh, well, the Cavs needed to taste the playoffs. I was like, no, you go as far as you can. You don't be satisfied with losing in the first round. You know, you always end on a loss unless you win a championship.
Yeah. And yeah. I think there was some shade being thrown at how the Cavs, like, tanked the last game against Charlotte.
Oh, well, as there should have been.
They should have tried to win. They could have won the division. They would have won the division if they beat Charlotte, which is something that goes on the banners. Yeah, it's a token thing, but you play to win. And I think a lot of people were pissed at that.
I mean, the Warriors have a 73-win regular season banner in their practice facility. So that's nothing to sneeze at.
Yep. So I think all these other things that, you know, the articles touch on, I think there's some validness, there's some pettiness too, don't get me wrong, but I think at the end of the day, the tone is that Mitchell, there's a chance he can stay, but he doesn't believe in JB, and that probably is the first domino, and after that domino, yeah, there are other moves that probably can be made, and will probably be made to structure the rest of the roster and the team.
Yeah, and I'm with you, and I've said it since the All-Star break that the Donovan Mitchell's not turning down. Nobody turns down the contract extension anymore. They sign the extension and then they lobby for a trade if they want out. And I don't think Donovan Mitchell's any different, although I have zero complaints about the way he's carried himself, the way he's dealt with the media, his positivity towards his teammates. Like, he's the absolute perfect guy you want. Like, he doesn't even do the LeBron weird ass subtweeting stuff. So I'm 100% happy about that. I don't know if you guys saw today where he basically panned the Varden Shams Lloyd article. He said, "I'm sick of you guys." You know, when they said he was sick of his teammates. You know,
that was a Fedor article, and he even liked a tweet from Mac Perry where Mac's like, "Man, F the media, it feels like they want us to leave." Donovan Mitchell liked that tweet from Mac.
Well, there you go. I met Mac Perry is a real one. I don't always agree with his blind optimism, but I do respect it.
Yeah. So, you know, if Donovan's paying attention and seeing that and liking that, then I feel like the chances of him signing extension are pretty good. Does he play all those years out? Maybe, maybe not, but I do think I agree with you. You know, the players are all about securing that guaranteed money, especially with injury.
Get that, like, paper. I mean, he had a knee injury this year. Is he going to need surgery? We don't know.
Yeah, and and I think the team will definitely cater to him and try to build what's best around him. And instead of fitting him with the Cavs, I think now they're going to make the decision to fit the team around him and his skill set. So I think one thing you got to remember is these guys, do they want to win championships? Yes, but they also have their ego. Like, Donovan Mitchell, I don't think, is the type of guy that wants to win championships and be the third option. I think he wants to clearly be the first option, and I think that's a part of the reason why he's willing to stay in Cleveland and willing to want to, you know, build it here.
Well, and I think the other part of that is if you watch the way Evan Mobley played in that Boston series, and you look at the Giannis Antetokounmpo career track, like, he reminds me of the way Antetokounmpo played when he was younger, before he really bulked up muscle wise and the footwork and the just all around game and the dog barking in behind you there, Eli.
That was Chris, not me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
I'm wearing the dog chain right now.
Woof, woof. Yeah, it's your JYD. But Mobley, I would be very excited if I was Donovan Mitchell to have Mobley, to have Max Strus, who, you know, played like a winner all season. Jared Allen, even. I thought, you know, the Cavs had a great 1-2 punch at the center spot. I'd be excited about that. And like you said, he's the face of the franchise. They've treated him with respect. They have a good future. Most of their core is a lot younger than him. So, you know, I why wouldn't he want to stay? I don't know. Chris, anything to add to that?
No, I mean, I think you're hitting the nail on the head. Something I said earlier in the year or whatever was just that I think Donovan sees the possibility, like, the Cavs could go on a decade long run with Evan Mobley, you know, and even Darius Garland and Jared Allen, you know, collectively, whatever, or parts of those three guys or whatever.
Right.
I think he sees a real opportunity to be a competitive contender for the next decade in his career in Cleveland. And I think that's going back to Eli's point, the ego, being the big guy, being the lead guy or whatever. Like, I think he sees a real opportunity to be competitive, be a contender for a long, long time here. I think also, I feel like these playoffs really solidify Donovan Mitchell as the face of the franchise. I feel like he's now being totally embraced by the Cleveland fandom. He's being embraced by, you know, the organization or whatever. And I think he's embraced the organization. He showed his cards by playing hurt in a lot of these playoffs, you know, with the knee struggles.
Oh, for sure.
And his game was, he was going to the rack. he was going to the rim, you know, like he was taking the punishment.
This is not the way he acted in Utah. Like, you could tell, like, those last two seasons in Utah, he wanted the F out of there.
Yeah, or just he kind of quit. Yeah. I mean, or just didn't give his best effort in that situation. And I didn't see that this time around. I think he was fully bought in. I think he's fully bought in. And I think the city's embraced him. And to Eli's point, your point, let's build this team around him now. Let's put all our chips on the table on him. And like, let's be competitive for the next. Let's see. We got a 5-year window with him at least. Very bare minimum, we have a 5-year window here. Let's get it done.
I'm with you. And, you know, I want to get into a little bit of slop, but I think if we are all operating from the standpoint, now, obviously, you know, Brian Windhorst said every team in the association practically has a trade package queued up for Donovan Mitchell. And, of course, all the Lakers fans are talking about how you can get a 2029, a 30-31 pick, Austin Reeves, and D'Angelo Russell for Donovan Mitchell, which I think is just a ludicrous trade package. I think that LeBron is coming home. I'll just put it out there. I think LeBron was not at that game 4 on accident. And I think that he's looking around the West and knows that he has zero chance to get back to the finals in the West. And Cleveland is a very enticing offer to give Darius Garland an off-ramp in L.A. and also maybe Caris LeVert. And then there is a huge hole at the 3-4 tall wing spot, a huge LeBron James-sized hole in the roster right now. And he would kind of make sense as the perfect guy to bring in. Eli, am I nuts?
You're absolutely nuts.
You don't think there's any way he's leaving LA?
No, I don't think so. And I think he's trying to do his best to make it seem like he doesn't want to play with his son anymore either.
Well, I don't think his son wants to play with him, I think is the bigger issue. Would you want to play with your dad if you were a 20-year-old NBA rookie?
No, could you imagine those road trips?
Oh my God, that'd be awkward. Oh my God, we got with the same groupie on separate trips. Oh, my dad's my Eskimo brother.
Oh no, wow. I did not think that was going to go there, but
I'm sorry, but I sorry.
No,
Nate,
but
Nate of TMZ.
Allegedly.
But all kidding aside, I don't think LeBron's coming back. And I just think if you're Donovan, you kind of also don't want him to come back because you want to build something different and not tied with LeBron's legacy.
No, and I'm with you there. That's the one kind of hole in my theory. Plus, different shoe companies, different agencies.
Yeah, that's the interesting part because I feel like Clutch has always had such a dominant hold on the Cavs organization, but now they genuinely don't, right? Like,
yeah, Darius Garland rides off into the sunset.
Darius Garland's not, you know, he's getting a lot of blame and flack. So it's like, you know, he's not, I don't know. It's hard because I don't think he's going to get any love. And I feel like they don't have any other guys. And when the Cavs had LeBron, it was like everyone was on Clutch. I mean, JR, you know, LeBron, Tristan, those guys are all making big money too. So it's interesting. It's interesting to say the least, how it's kind of the turntables have turned for Clutch in Cleveland. So,
yeah, for sure. And I think with that, we'll be back for the second hour shortly. Welcome back. Second hour, Cavs the Podcast. Nate Smith, Chris Francis, Eli Kim. I feel like I always say Chris Francis second because it just rolls off the tongue. anyway, second hour, and I think we're going to get in a little more slop here. If you had to say whether he stays or whether he goes in the offseason, Darius Garland, who's more likely to be a Cav next fall, Darius Garland or Donovan Mitchell or Jared Allen, Eli?
I think as of right now, I think Donovan Mitchell is the most likely to be the Cav of those three.
Unbelievable. That's crazy.
Who do you think's more likely to be moved?
I think Garland is the most likely to be moved.
That's interesting because I would think that Allen is a much more movable contract because he makes $20 million a year. And for what he does, he's definitely below market value. And he's also only got 1 year, whereas Garland literally has $162 million in 4 years left on his contract. That is a huge number. And I think that's a hard number to move, but do you think Darius Garland gets moved? And if he does, where to?
Yeah, so I think there are a couple options when we think about Darius. I think the easiest one for me is the Spurs. I think that's like a very popular one, to be honest.
Like he and Pop have good relationship, supposedly, well, right?
Yeah, and on top of that, I just think they desperately need a point guard to set up Wemby. I mean, Trey Jones is a decent like six man bench guy, and they pay him like that, but they don't have like a real point guard. I mean,
who was their starting point guard for a lot of the year? It was
Trey Jones. Trey Jones.
No, but also who was the point forward?
Yeah,
so yeah, Jeremy Sochan.
Yeah,
I don't know how to pronounce
it. Yeah, I don't know either.
You know, he can't shoot, so it creates a lot of spacing issues when him, Wemby, and Trey Jones play together.
Well, and if you've got Wemby behind you, some of Darius Garland's defensive issues definitely can be minimized.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think, I just think Popovich liked them a lot. Obviously, took Keldon Johnson ahead of him in the Olympics because Keldon's his guy. But ironically, I think that's the player that the Spurs want to trade, either Keldon or Devin Vassell. I think those are the kind of targets that the Cavs would have in return.
Yeah, and then in the starting lineup, you would switch Strus down to the two and those guys would play the three.
Yeah, but, you know, Vassell and Keldon are actually not that tall. They're both listed at 6'6 and 6'5, I think. So, in a weird way, it doesn't really solve the issue.
If history is any indicator, that is the perfect non-LeBron starting small forward for the Cavs.
That is very true. The other kind of teams that have been listed are New Orleans, perhaps like a mega deal with Garland and Allen going to New Orleans.
For like Ingram and
Herb Jones, maybe. I mean, that's kind of what's been floated. Or maybe also Jonas Valanciunas coming back and a little bit of a sign and trade as a backup big.
I would not sleep on CJ McCollum coming back either, because he doesn't really fit from an age perspective the curve of the rest of that team.
That's true, but he'd have to probably come off the bench.
For sure.
Cavs, yeah.
But also Northeast Ohio guy.
That's very true. That's not a bad idea. I think of the teams, the Spurs, Pelicans, and Evan Damrell reported that the Timberwolves really like Darius Garland as well. But I just don't know who the Timberwolves would honestly be able to offer in a trade. They don't have any players that stick out, and obviously they wouldn't want to trade Cat or Gobert or Jaden McDaniels back.
What about your boy that you wanted to sign last summer?
Naz Reid.
What about Naz Reid and Mike Conley?
Yeah, but I think Conley's very old and he's missing games in this playoff. So
you gotta give up a contract to get a contract.
Yeah,
right?
I agree. Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting conundrum.
I would throw in Orlando as a possible
Garland destination. Another.
Well, and then LA as well.
Sure.
True.
I mean, the
Orlando
Lakers
would be interesting, though, because I don't know who Orlando would want or Orlando would send back, to be honest.
I think they would be willing to give up anybody except for Franz and Paolo.
Yeah, I feel like Wendell Carter Jr. and Suggs. Oh, I might go for that, to be honest with you. Like, I really was impressed with Suggs, and I honestly think he might be a really good guard to pair with Donovan Mitchell.
But I think the scenario that a lot of people are thinking, and just, you know, go full circle with Slop, is trade Garland for Vassell and Zach Collins to kind of be your third big.
That does Allen stick around in that scenario, or does he go somewhere else?
And then you trade Allen and LeVert to New Orleans for Brandon Ingram.
Wow, that's an interesting.
And then that way you start, you're starting Mitchell at the one, Strus at the two, Ingram at the three, maybe even the four, depending on how you want to play. Mobley at the five, and maybe Dean Wade starting at the four. You always need a glue guy, right? So some kind of lineup like that.
It was for 20 games a season.
That is true, because Ingram has not played over 65 games since his
rookie. And neither has Dean Wade. That was more true. Knock on Wade.
But
unfortunate shot my boy's got to take there.
Yeah, but unfortunately, I do think it's just too early to tell. I mean, none of this is going to happen until Donovan makes his decision, and that doesn't really get heated up until after the draft and right before free agency.
Yeah, I mean, that Lakers deal is D'Lo and Austin Reeves and a couple garbage draft picks.
Yeah, and it just doesn't make sense. The Cavs went further than the Lakers. They're not going to try to rebuild after doing that.
Well, I like Austin Reeves. I think the other guy I would like, I could also see, there's a lot of three-way trade possibilities. I think Alex Caruso makes a lot of sense on the Cavs. And, you know, you could do a three-way deal with, like, Reeves going to Chicago and then, you know, Caruso coming to the Cavs, something like that. I think there's a lot of possibilities there. Those contracts are so big for, like, Darius Garland that you can fit multiple players, and you've got to have one team that's kind of willing to absorb a big deal to make that happen. I'll give you another idea that is not nuts. I think Oklahoma City might make sense for a Darius Garland, or for Jared Allen, I think may make some sense for Oklahoma City.
Yeah, that's actually a team that Evan Damrell said that could be interested in Jared Allen.
Yeah. Any other slop? Like, any other guys you think? But I'll give you another name. Chris Francis is Isaac Okoro Cav it come October.
I think so. Not necessarily because he's earned it or deserves it, but who wants him?
I'm with you. I mean, here's a question. Do you give Isaac Okoro a qualifying offer? Because I'm not sure he's worth, what's the qualifying offer? 11 million? I'm not sure he's worth that.
Yeah, I think it's a bit higher. And no, I mean, no, because if for anything else, I'm afraid that whether JB or somebody else is still going to continue to play him over Wade and Merrill.
Yeah, you got to save him from themselves. But the other side of that is that the Cavs need a coach that makes players feel empowered on offense, and they don't have that. And maybe with that, those guys' confidence blossoms, but I'm not sure. What about you, Eli? What's your take on Okoro?
I like Okoro, but I just think his offense has not gotten there, and I don't know if it can get there because the way the Cavs are constructed, if they are going to really go with Mobley as their lone big, you kind of need the other four guys to all be able to shoot threes, and Okoro has not proven to be able to do that.
Yeah. I mean, the other side of that is you give up on him when he's going to be 24 next year. All of a sudden he kind of figures it out. And I mean, that's a really tough one, but I'll say it is not hard. Derrick Jones Jr. is a guy off the street that's given great minutes to Dallas. And there's guys that are available if you do your homework. that can provide what an Isaac Okoro provides. Like, there's plenty of guys that can play defense and not shoot in the playoffs. Like, that's not a hard skill set.
Tall enough to guard legit 3 and 4s, right?
So. I mean, the Cavs had Sindarius Thornwell. I'm not sure he was that much worse. Eli hedging his bets there. Come on.
He's like, let's not get crazy here.
Let's not get crazy.
I mean, he still was on a roster last year. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, did you think that the Cavs G League guys play any role in their decisions? I think it's very strange that Craig Porter Jr. hurt his ankle at the end of the regular season, was never heard from again. Was that just a really bad ankle sprain?
I think so. And I think he signed an NBA deal, so he's on the team next year.
And Ty Jerome is another name.
Yeah, that one's interesting that he basically like didn't play the whole year. And
yeah, just a red shirt.
Yeah. And I don't know. There's not a lot of roster spots on this team. Like the only guys the Cavs are going to have to replace are Morris Thompson and Damian Jones. Like those are.
I'd love to see Morris back next year. And I hate Marcus Morris, but I thought he was a million times better than Georges Niang.
I agree. I do kind of wonder if the Cavs will take this opportunity to get rid of Niang's contract when they offload Allen or Garland. Because I think Allen and Niang is pretty close number-wise for Ingram. So that might be a big enough asset for the Cavs to want to do that deal.
The other side of that, though, is he's really good friends with Donovan Mitchell.
That is true, but I think even in the best friendships, if he can't help you on the court, I think Donovan would understand why they
signed away. And they can always go sign Royce O'Neal, which I expect the Cavs to try to do.
I expect the Cavs to give Royce O'Neal basically the full mid-level exception this year. That's my free agency take.
Ooh.
Nice. Spicy.
Assuming Mitchell stays, obviously. If he doesn't, then obviously that won't happen.
I mean, let's explore that scenario then. So if Mitchell gets moved, I mean, it's two very good players and three draft picks, right?
I would think you would get at least a starter and probably like a high level role player at the very least.
Or a prospect.
Yeah.
Like a well-regarded young player.
Yeah. And I think the names thrown out there are kind of lackluster right now. Obviously, I would not do the Lakers deal.
That's such a garbage deal.
I hate how they're pushing that. That's so stupid.
No, Lakers, I think
they're fascist.
I think there's, I think there's more better odds LeBron plays for the Cavs in 6 weeks than there is that trade goes down.
I agree with that. And then I also just think like the Nets deal, it's like Cam Johnson and Cam Thomas. And like a couple of the Houston first, or not the, yeah, the Houston first. And I'm just like,
yeah. That's exactly.
Garbage.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you.
The Heat deal is like
Tyler Hero poo-poo planner.
And Jaime Jasquez and one first-round pick, right?
I like Jaime Jasquez, and I don't hate Tyler Hero, but those guys are complementary players. Like, they're not the second best. They're a fourth, fifth, high-level bench guy on a championship roster. They're not a guy that gets you to the finals as a top-three guy.
Yeah. And I watched the Pat Riley interview. I just thought it was so funny. I know we talked about it briefly last pod, but just so funny.
Walk me through it because I wasn't on that one. I did listen, but I don't remember that part.
So Pat Riley had his like post-mortem press conference.
As Evil Genius calls him, the sockless curmudgeon.
But the media is like, oh, like Jimmy Butler, he's eligible for a max extension after this year. What are your thoughts? And he's like, we don't have to extend until next year. Like he can.
I love that.
That was literally the response. And then he's like, well, what do you think of Jimmy? He missed a lot of games. Are you okay with him? Like, what's your mindset for next year? And he's like, are you kidding me? He's like, did you see him at the Miami Grand Prix? Like, I don't know if he's just trolling
but a reporter asked him, oh, like, what do you think of the Knicks? What do you think of, you know, the Celtics? And he's like, oh, they're lucky that I wasn't healthy or we win. He's like, are you kidding me? I think he's trolling because we didn't win a freaking game against them when he was not playing.
Riley said that?
What is he talking about here?
Riley said that?
Riley was saying stuff like that.
Yeah, wow.
And he was saying, like, Jimmy, I can't, like, I just hear those comments that he makes at the Miami Grand Prix, and I'm just sitting there like, are you trolling, Jimmy? Because we did not accomplish any of the goals we reached for the season.
That's interesting. If there's anybody in the league that can get away with that, it's Riley, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, it's I don't know, it's the era we live in, but the comments below were like, oh, racism, or he's a boomer, and I'm just like, no, I think him and Jimmy have made it to the finals, and I think there are expectations of players who make that kind of money. It's not anything wrong to call them out and stuff like that, because that is trollish behavior. Your season's over, and you're talking like you would have beaten them, you know? So,
yeah, I think the other side of the Donovan Mitchell equation is that who is out there that once they traded for Donovan Mitchell, he'd be in a better situation than he would be with the Cavs right now. Like, I guess the Knicks are in that discussion, but I'm not sure he and Brunson can play together.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, if he goes to the Heat, like, or the Nets, like, the Nets aren't going to be better than the Cavs were this year.
No, and they don't have a cent. Well, I guess they got Jackson Hayes.
I don't know.
I can't remember. But
Nick Claxton still.
Nick Claxton, yeah. Claxton's better than Hayes. Yeah, I don't know who is better. He's not going to go to Boston. I mean, I guess Boston could put together a package for him, but that kind of doesn't make a lot of sense. He could go out west. I guess Sacramento or maybe the Clippers. The Clippers might make some sense around like a Paul George deal, but...
Yeah, but at that point, like, Paul George's would be a sign-and-trade. You don't give up Donovan Mitchell for a sign-and-trade.
No, I mean, I'm with you, and that guy's not ever healthy anyway.
Yeah. And so, I guess the whole domino is this offseason, I think it's pretty simple. Mitchell either decides he extends or not, and I think regardless if he stays or not, the Cavs are going to fire JB, and they'll pick a different coach.
Yeah, so...
And kind of the coaching carousel that has been discussed was, I think the candidates are guys from Utah that have ties to him. My text message that I sent, like a week or two ago, was Johnny Bryant, who's the associate head coach of the Knicks.
Yeah, who left Utah to join Thibodeau's staff.
Yeah, I think he'd be a good fit. I think Alex Jensen, who's an assistant for the Jazz. Or
no,
the
Dallas.
Mavericks, sorry. Yeah, the Mavericks.
Yeah, but was a longtime assistant for the Jazz when Mitchell was there. Correct. And also the very first charge coach for the Cavs.
Exactly. So he could be a coming home moment for him. And then last but not least, I think the third person who keeps getting brought up and is not a Utah connection is Sam Cassell. And the main reason is I think he's earned his due to be.
And he's an assistant with Boston, right?
And apparently the report I think I saw was that, you know, Donovan's very close to Jalen and Jason, and they have rave reviews of Sam Cassell.
Jason
Tatum.
Oh, Jalen Brown and Jason Tatum, yeah. Right.
And I think deep down, I think if the Celtics don't win it this year, they would probably want to secure Sam Cassell as their head coach moving forward. So in a way, I don't think the Cavs should waste too much time on this.
No, I'm with you.
I think they should go for it. And then I think Sam Amico reported that they would also try to interview JJ Redick, but I'm not sure the validity of that.
I like the Cassell move because A, unlike JB Bickerstaff, he's an ex-player. He's going to have that respect in the locker room. He's an ex-championship player. You know, he won championships, I believe, with the Rockets. I'm not sure if he got any others at the end of his career, but has that pedigree. Definitely was always kind of a cerebral player. I mean, he looks like a gray alien, so you know he's like 20 IQ points smarter than everybody else. I don't hate that hire at all. I like all three of those names, but the guy that might have the most gravitas, which is, I think, something the Cavs need right now, especially in a era where Jamie Bickerstaff was so horrible at working the refs. The Cavs need somebody that knows how to work the refs, and also somebody that knows who the good assistants are and how he can build a staff. And Sam Cassell feels like a guy that could do that.
I think Sam Cassell would be my favorite of all those guys. And I would actually try to bring Johnny Bryant to be like the second in command in that scenario.
Yeah, but I don't think he's leaving New York associate head coach. And that's I just don't think that's going to happen.
Never know, though, because Thibodeau is getting a big extension soon. So, you know, you don't see a pathway there. That could be a reason to think about it at the very least.
Yeah. And maybe Alex Jensen as an associate head coach.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. Big upgrade on the staff. Although I do kind of wonder, I would be open to maybe trying to bring back Buckner just to have the continuity of the good culture.
That I'm the same way. Maybe he'd actually get camera time. Maybe. Yeah. Chris, any names you want to throw out there?
No, I mean, Cassell, you know, as we discussed in the group chat, I think Cassell is really the prize of among the names that I've heard for that experience. He's plied his trade for a long time. One, you know, you said he was a championship player. He won championships as a coach, too, I believe. So
as an assistant?
Yeah. My only knock on Sam Cassell is that does he have Doc Rivers stink on him? You know, is my only concern about him. But
apparently Doc
Rivers
wants him as to be his lead assistant in Milwaukee. That's the word. He wants to make him the highest paid assistant. So,
well, there you go. So, you know, I want to avoid the Doc Rivers stink. But, you know, other than that, you know, I think Sam Cassell is, you know, I forget who said it, whether it was you or Nate. I mean, the gravitas is necessary. We're trying to make a run for a championship now. We need serious professionals that know how to get it done. And the time is now. So,
and who are going to resonate with the players. And if they're going to have a beef with a ref, like, they've got the gravitas to go to the media and say, hey, this is some bullshit right here. Like, that's something JB was just never in his wheelhouse.
Yep. One quick note on Sam Cassell. He actually did win 3 championships. He was the veteran for the Boston team that won in 2008, 2009.
Okay. So. Yeah, that makes sense. Like, behind Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, way behind. I don't think he played that much, to be honest.
That's a great call out. And it's funny because my buddy Eric was talking about deep bench guys. He was like, yeah, Georges Niang is actually from an ancient Tagalog word that means deep bench player. So anyway, sorry, I screwed that joke up by hitting the mute button twice. So,
well, with our technology, you'll skip the long silence maybe.
Yeah, there you go. I'm trying to think, we got anything else to cover here? Like, what are the other major things? Kobe Altman's still here, right?
Oh, I think one thing I do want to talk about, I think Dan Gilbert's going to be way more active this year. I think he's already firing off tweets.
Yeah. He's been stuff, so
it'll be
pretty
active to see how active he'll be. I think,
which makes me think he's going to screw up this head coach hire and we're going to end up with JJ Redick.
Juwan Howard, maybe.
Oh, my God. You bite your tongue.
No, I'm hoping not. I do think Kobe still kind of runs the show, personally. But.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, what was it? He's going to go try and get... Who's the Michigan State head coach?
Tom Izzo again.
He's going to go try and get Tom Izzo again.
If he tries to get that college coach from you, Dan Hurley, I'm going to be so pissed.
Well, who's the other one that they're talking about? Oh God, he was like one of those Duke Brotherhood guys from back in the not Pat Garrity, but the Christian Laettner era. Who was the starting point guard on that Laettner team?
Oh, it was Bobby Hurley.
Yeah, Bobby Hurley is like a head coach too, right?
I believe so. I think he's at Arizona State, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, something like that. Like, I've just heard that's a name I've heard on the DL, but maybe I'm confusing him with the guy who was the Hurley that you were talking about, Eli?
Dan Hurley, who's the UConn head coach.
Oh, okay. Are they
his brother?
Yeah, I assumed. Okay. Yeah, because Hurley's not that common a name. So, anyway. Of the guys, of the teams that are left, what are you feeling? Like, Knicks Pacers, who wins that series? Do you think it's going to be the Knicks, Eli?
I think so.
Chris?
Yes.
I'm picking Pacers. I'm picking Pacers. Ooh, I think Pacers are going to... I think the Knicks are just too banged up. Like, they went full Tibbs for too long. The Pacers scare me. The Pacers are... Do you know they have 4 of the top 14 picks from the 2020 draft? And they're all playing pretty well for them?
Yeah, but they're soft as Charmin.
Well, sure, but... I still think they can make the Eastern Conference Finals just because the Knicks tend to run their players to the ground. Yeah. And I think Boston's going to end up in the finals regardless.
But they'd be backing in. Also, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot with the argument that the Cavs should have won then. I feel like Indiana's food, especially for a team. You know, I just feel like they're kind of like Oklahoma City. With no big presence.
And, no, I'm with you. I mean, the Cavs should have won. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think any team coming out of the East is beating any team coming out of the West. So let's go through the West then. Dallas and Oklahoma City. Like, we were all picking Dallas, right?
Yep.
Eli? Oh, we might have lost Eli. Eli dropped, I think. Eli's out. Yep, he's got to drop.
Okay.
He just fell into a thirst trap, I think.
Get him. Shout out to Eli, our boy.
Hey, you do you, Eli. Then next up we've got... what's the other West series? Oh, Minnesota and Denver. Like, we're all picking Denver, right?
Yeah, although it's going to game 7. So,
Who won tonight?
Minnesota has a 26 point lead.
What a weird series. Like, the road teams won every game.
No, well, Minnesota's at home tonight.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, so, okay. No.
And so,
no, it's 2-2.
It's 3-2.
Game 7. Sorry, I missed the game.
Yeah, so the home teams have won the last 2 games.
Got it.
But they've beat each other twice each on the
Sorry, road. I was a game behind.
Yeah, no, it's all good. But, it's going to game 7. They're putting up a fight. I would give it to Denver because they're going to be at home for game 7, though.
It's all good. I'm looking forward to that. I'm sorry I didn't get to watch tonight, but I had to pod with my boys.
It's on in the background. So.
Nice. Yeah, I didn't do that because I can't think and chew gum at the same time.
Okay.
Who's your pick? So you've got Dallas and Denver. Who's your pick there?
That's a tough one.
I'm going Denver just because of home field.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And Luka's just kind of, he hasn't shown up yet, really, right?
Derek Lively is a great rookie, but
they're all food. Gafford, yeah. Lively.
Yeah, there's a difference between beating OKC with, you know, Chet Holmgren and beating the Joker, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a fair point. So you would give the edge to Denver there.
And it's all chalk out east, right? Boston.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know.
You think it'd be interesting to get your opinion. If the Knicks win, do you think they have a shot against Boston?
If they get a player or two back, if they can get healthy. Yeah. If they can get Anunoby and maybe, the other guy, I can't remember.
Mitrov or.
No, it was another guy. It was, God dang it. I thought it was another guy, but maybe it was just Anunoby. I mean, they got to get Anunoby back in some.
No, he's such a physically dominant wing defender. And offensive player. He's a really good offensive player. Like,
yeah, he complements them so well. And I think their record's insane with him. Like, it's like they're like 25-7 or something with him.
Yeah, I think they can beat Boston, but they got to get healthy. And that's always the problem when
also, the assumption that New York would be competitive in that situation is Porzingis continuing to be gimpy, limited slash hurt.
Hey, who called that at the beginning of the season?
You did. Hey, good one. From downtown, baby.
Hey, man, there's a lot of things you can bet on. Porzingis' health isn't one of them. You want to lose money, bet on Kristaps Porzingis staying healthy.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. He had a good season. He's probably the second most important player to their to their situation.
Yeah, because everybody else has a built-in backup. And that was the bummer of the Cavs season. Like, the Cavs just could absolutely cook Al Horford anytime they wanted to, but they just ran out of bodies, and Darius Garland was too freaking tired to do it in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, it's, man, yeah, it's a tough pill to swallow when it's health, you know?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Anything to pitch, Chris Francis? And you were right, we got to a not-so-tight 90.
No, I mean, I one thing I might pitch is, I guess, Taylor Swift's new album. I haven't listened to it yet. So.
Dead Poets Society Poets Department.
Yeah, it should have been Dead Poets Society. Why not? I mean, why do the facsimile? Just rip it off.
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know if I have anything to pitch. Like, I haven't listened to that much new albums lately. It's been Cavs.
I'm scared. That's concerning.
It's been Cavs and work for me, to be honest with you.
Get yourself cultured.
Actually, I will pitch. I have listened to. So I went to Ohio 2 weeks ago for my buddy Joel. It was 2 weeks or last week. I can't remember. It's all a blur. My cousin slash good friend Joel, he turned 40. We went to the Inn of the Green Dragon in downtown Akron, which is a board game bar, which big shout out to the Inn of the Green Dragon in Akron. Just fantastic ambiance. Like, they've done it up like a medieval inn. It's great in there. You would not know it at all from the outside. There's a board game store downstairs. There's an awesome Indian restaurant downstairs. It is right off Perkins Street. Fantastic venue. The food was great. The beer was great. If you want to do a birthday party, they have like literally a secret room behind a bookshelf door. Like, it's super fun. And then after that, I had bought him the new Father John Misty album from a awesome little vinyl shop in downtown Akron called Time Machine Records. And my buddy Joel had already had it. He had the whole extended box set. So we took it back and they exchanged it, no problem. And I picked up a whole bunch of vintage vinyl, some really cool stuff like 10 Years After and the band Ace and Steely Dan record. And then I got home and realized my record player didn't work, but I don't care. And then we went back to my buddy Joel's place and I spent the night instead of coming home because it was his 40th and I had to hang with my boy. And we listened to some pretty awesome albums. Listened to the first Steely Dan album, Dirty Work. We listened to Devo, Are We Not Men? We Are Devo, which is just a frickin' masterpiece of an album. I think those were the two biggies. I can't remember more. I was about 10 beers.
Wow, you delivered.
Actually, 10 beers just, in by then.
Yeah.
10 beers in.
Yeah. So. Well, you just inspired me. I will pitch something. Went to the Underground Railroad Freedom Center in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Nice.
Yeah. I went to a lecture commemorating the career and life. He's still alive, so but he wrote an autobiography of Dr. Alvin Crawford, who was, a trailblazing African-American doctor, first Black medical student to graduate from University of Tennessee Medical School, first Black physician, surgeon, to be chair of orthopedics at Cincinnati Children's Hospital, fantastic reception with free booze and food.
You gotta love that.
Yeah, fantastic view of the riverfront. So I was mightily impressed. It was a packed house too.
Cincinnati shines when you're downtown. That is an underrated downtown, if you ask me.
No, you're absolutely right. The skyline when you're going down the cut in the hill
and with the river. Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I appreciate that, Nate, as a Clevelander. So.
Hey, I celebrate all of Ohio. I grew up in West Central Ohio, so I remember going down to Cincy for visiting the Cincinnati Zoo, and Dayton was the big city that was nearby me, biggest big city, and then of course Cincinnati's just 45 minutes south of that. So
indeed, yeah. So shout out to the Underground Railroad Freedom Center, pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. And we will see what happens with the Cavs. No matter what happens, I'm happy with the way the season turned out. I'm proud of having rooted for this team. You know, we complain a lot about the players and their play on the floor, but nobody on this team ever gave us a reason to be embarrassed to be a Cavs fan, right?
Oh, amen to that. I mean,
and same thing with the coaching staff. Like, J.B. Bickerstaff, the person, I had no issue with. J.B. Bickerstaff, the coach, kind of drove me nuts sometimes, but those are two different things, right?
Absolutely. No, this is a team that's you could be proud of rooting for. You know what I mean?
Go ahead. I thought the Max Strus quote about just these are a bunch of guys that really enjoy playing together was a really salient quote.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think they're about ball. They're about ball and not much else. And I like that, you know, just very low maintenance. Even Donovan Mitchell is a superstar. Like you said, like no sub tweeting, no passive aggressive. It's just, you know, he just does his thing and comes in as a professional. A lot of good professionals.
Lunch pail player.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Love it. So that's a great point.
Yep. And with that, I'll say go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Oh, and one last question. Are they drafting Bronny? Go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blog Podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite bloggers. There's a fire.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.